merged, a blur of motion too fast to understand.
52 knots, the captain said with satisfaction. Behind them, Polestar fired its own high sails. The boom resounded across the water. If we're lucky, Candlas said, as they watched the missile rise, she'll tangle and we'll get the jump on them. Damn ticklish to catch a wind. Once you're up, it's fine, but damn ticklish to start.
But Polestar's sails caught. Through the long glass of Dauntless's nav system, they watched as the ship heaved itself up onto its own hydrofoils, its feral bulk skimming above the water.
"Why don't they just shoot down our sails?" Naylor asked.
"They may, once they're within a mile. They can torch the parasail with a chemical round."
"But they won't light us up the same way? Sink us?"
The captain exchanged glances with Reynolds.
"Chavez is greedy. If she can take us as a prize, she'll call us pirate. If she wrecks us, tangles us, and sinks us, she doesn't get the money."
The two ships sliced across the ocean. Sometimes it seemed as if Dauntless had gained a little ground, but when Naylor looked again, always the pale ship on the horizon had grown. He shivered at the sight of the other clipper, hunting them like a shark. The captain pointed again at the map.
"If Naylor's right, we can slip these teeth here, and it will even look as if we're intending to hide."
"If he's right," Reynolds emphasized. "I am," Naylor insisted. "I know that water." "Ever sail it?"
Naylor hesitated. He wanted to tell them that he had, that he knew the waves, that he knew he was right.
"No," he admitted. "But I know the teeth. I've seen them at low tide."
He pointed at the numbers on the map.
"If your charts are right about the old depths, at high tide, you can run straight across, right here."
He pointed to the edge of the island.
"Between the island and the teeth, there's a gap."
"It's an invitation for a sinking," Reynolds said.
"High tide won't be until dark, so you won't have much for landmarks, and GPS margin of error might not tell us we're wrong until we're dead on some old I-beam." "I know where it is," Naylor said sullenly. "I know the gap."
"Yeah?"
she asked.
"In the dark? With only moonlight? With one chance to get it right?"
"Let the boy alone," the captain said.
Naylor glared at her.
"You've got a better idea? You're dead either way, right? What are you going to do, surrender? Let them call you a pirate and string you up?"
Naylor scowled.
"You swanks are damn soft. You're afraid to gamble even when you're already dead."
The ship lurched underneath them. Everyone reached to catch their balance. Candlas and Reynolds exchanged a look. All afternoon the seas had been thickening, and now as they came out on deck, the water was running high and rough. The hydrofoils kept the Dauntless above much of the chop, but as the waves grew higher, the prow of the ship was starting to bury itself in foam. Candlas studied the high-altitude parasails where they flew against gathering clouds.
"We're not going to be able to stay up on the foils much longer. Not with the ocean running like this."
The ship surged through another wave, rocking. Water rushed over the decks as the ship plowed out of a trough. The deck tilted abruptly as one of the foils lost its grip in the foam. Naylor grabbed a railing for support. The ship righted itself and lunged forward again, dragged by the parasail high overhead. The storm clouds darkened and roiled like a seething cauldron of snakes. Lightning flickered in their bellies.
"Is this a city killer?" he asked.
The captain shook his head. "No, but still a complication. Makes everything more ticklish."
"We can dodge them in the storm," Reynolds suggested.
"They'll have their radar on us, pinging us the whole way," Candlas said.
The only way we escape is if we leave them wrecked.
You could get Miss Nita killed if she's aboard.
Candlis scowled at Reynolds.
You think I don't know it?
He looked away.
It's an ugly business. We'll put a crew of boarders on, try to pull her off in the confusion.
You don't know it will work.
Thank you, Reynolds. I appreciate your input. But I'll be damned if I'm going to let us all die because we're too squeamish to take the one advantage we've got.
Dauntless hurtled through the storm. When the winds became too uncertain, the captain ordered the high sail reefed. It came down, its monofilament wire ripping and squealing as the cannon reels dragged the flapping parasail toward the deck. A shriek rose over the lash of the storm. The reel jammed. Nod and Vine and Trimble hurried for the cannon. The parasail whipped sideways in the wind, and Dauntless heeled with the sudden shifting drag. From the con, through the rain, Naylor could see the crew fighting with the reel. Beside him, Captain Candlis held the ship's wheel. He shook his head.
"Tell them to cut it," he said.
Naylor looked at him uncertainly.
"Go, boy, now! Cut it loose!"
Naylor dashed down to the deck. He barely remembered to hook himself to an anchor before he went out into the wind's lash. A wave washed over the prow of the deck, knocking him off his feet. He skidded into the main mast with a numbing impact. He struggled to his feet and stumbled across the pitching deck.
"Cut it!"
he shouted over the storm's roar. Nott glanced at him, then up at the captain. A blade came out, and with a fierce slash, the monofilament line parted. The wire whipped up and away, writhing like a snake. The parasail disappeared into cloud-bellied darkness. Watching it go, Naylor wondered if the ship had lost an advantage that they would miss later. Nott gave him a sad little smile.
"Can't be helped, boy."
And then he was running to join the rest of the crew as they unfurled the main sails in the storm. Naylor watched in awe as the crew fought to do their work. Rain slashed them. The seas rose and tried to drown them with huge, surging waves, but still they grimly wrestled the ship to their will. And Dauntless responded. She surged through the stormy sea, lunging into wave troughs and then climbing their slopes before plowing down into the next deep liquid ravine. All around, waves rose high and monstrous. Naylor clung to the rail, clipped to his safety lines and out of the way of the feverish work as the crew fought their ship forward. Night fell heavy on them. Except for the occasional blast of lightning, it was black. Somewhere behind them, Polestar pursued. But Naylor couldn't see it and had no idea where it was. It was nice to pretend that its sleek outline wasn't back there, hunting. But it was a fantasy. Eventually, Captain Candlis gave the word and they started shunting toward the coast, running closer to where they would attempt their trickery. Despite night blindness, the Polestar would follow, sniffing at them with its radar arrays. And indeed, when Naylor finally ducked out of the elements to drink a hot cup of coffee, Dauntless's main radar showed the bloody blip of the fighting ship closing still. Naylor sucked in his breath.
"They're close."
The captain nodded, his face grim.
"Closer than we'd like. Go aft and look."
Naylor ran to a ladder and climbed up through the ship's aft hatch. Rain beat down on him. Salt foam rushed around his ankles as the ship tore through another wave and climbed sickeningly. Naylor stared back into the slash of rain. Lightning ripped, the darkness and thunder exploded. The Polestar appeared, closer than he would have guessed, rising over a wave crest and crashing down again. It disappeared again into the darkness. When Naylor returned to the con, the captain said,
"They kept their high sails up longer than we did. They've got a more stable ship."
"What are they going to do?"
The captain stared at the radar blip, of their pursuer. They're going to threaten us, and then they're going to board us.
In the storm?
They've fought in worse seas. The Arctic is the worst fighting on the planet. They aren't afraid of a little rain and waves.
The captain leaned close to Naylor.
Just between us, boy. You're sure about those teeth?
Naylor made himself nod, but the captain didn't let him go.
This is a gamble. The kind I don't like. The kind that killed Miss Nita's last ship. You understand?
He jerked his head toward the decks, indicating his crew.
Maybe you think your own life's cheap, but you're risking everyone else here, too.
Naylor looked away.
In clear weather.
He trailed off. Finally, he looked up at the captain.
I don't know. In the dark? In a storm?
He shook his head.
I've been out on the bay and been through the gap, but I don't know if it will work or not. Not like this.
The captain nodded. He stared back again into the darkness where their pursuer lurked.
Fair enough. Not the answer I wanted, but honest. We'll trust the fates, then.
You're still going to try? Naylor asked.
Sometimes it's better to die trying.
What about everyone else?
Candlis was solemn.
They knew the risks of coming with me when we left the Orleans. There were always safer options than crewing with an old loyalist like me.
He pointed to the nav screens and the infrared feeds of the shoreline, glowing green before them, flaring with lightning flashes.
Now be my eyes, boy. Help us find safe harbor.
Naylor watched the screens. The shadows of shoreline showed, lit by more lightning flashes. A cannon boomed behind them. A missile streaked overhead.
She's afraid we're going to make a run into the jungles,
Candlis observed. Naylor looked back.
Are they going to sink us?
Polestar is not your problem.
The captain grabbed Naylor's shoulder and pointed him forward.
Your problem is out there. Show me where we need to be.
Naylor bent to the screens, scanned the black shoreline ahead. The island glowed on screen. He frowned.
No, that was wrong. It was some other hill. Everything was different in the dark and rain. The ship heaved through the waves.
I don't see it, he said. He tried to peer through the rain-spattered glass, saw nothing but blackness.
Look harder, then!
The captain's fingers dug into his shoulder.
Naylor stared at the darkness. It was impossible. The land in the scope's view was all a blur of vegetation and self-same coast.
He stared into the rain again, looking through the forward windscreens. Another slash of lightning. Another. And then a ripping crack of thunder.
He saw the island and gasped. They were too far off.
Back there, he pointed.
We're past it.
The captain cursed. He hurled the wheel over, calling orders to the crew. The sails cracked and flapped ineffectually. The ship rocked violently as a wave took it from an unexpected angle. The shadow of a crewman plunged from the mast, then jerked to a halt, dangling precariously from a harness. The sail's boom swept across the deck. Dauntless came around. Suddenly the great bulk of the Polestar loomed over them, bearing down. Dauntless was wallowing in the waves, her sails flapping uncertain. Down on the deck, Naylor could hear Reynolds shouting,
"Make fast! Make fast!"
as she prepared the crew to run aground.
"Hands on the pumps!"
Polestar was on top of them. Naylor could see half-men on the gunwales twirling grappling hooks, eager to leap aboard. Dauntless's sails flapped and then suddenly filled with wind. Dauntless surged forward again, gaining speed. Polestar threw herself up beside them, seeking to grapple, but Dauntless lunged past, carried by the surf.
"Right!" Naylor yelled. "Go right!"
He could see the island. The teeth were already beneath them. The big ones would be. They were going to run aground.
"Starboard is what we call it,"
Candlas said dryly as he spun the wheel. The man seemed strangely relaxed suddenly. Dauntless surged forward, shoved by the waves toward the rocky outcrop of the island. And then they were sucking through the shallows and past the island and the teeth. The ship settled into the bay's relative calm.
"Storm anchors!"
Captain Candlas shouted as the crew furled the ship's sails. Dauntless wallowed, then shuddered and swung about as prow anchors bit. Waves rushed against her sudden immobility. She turned with the waves, her nose pointing out into the surf, and then the aft anchors dropped and the ship stilled. Naylor clambered down from the conning deck and out into the slash of the rain.
"Launch in two," Reynolds shouted. "Prepare to board."
Lightning flashed. The great bulk of the Pole Star was coming for them. Naylor clutched the rail as the monster roared in.
"Fates," he whispered, and touched his forehead.
He hadn't realized he was religious until just now, but suddenly he found himself praying. Reynolds came up beside him, watching the fighting ship plow down on them.
"We'll see if you're right, boy."
Naylor's throat was dry. Pole Star surged forward, seemingly planning to simply crush them under its weight. As it poured through the surf, Naylor was suddenly seized with a new terror. In the high seas of the storm, the teeth would all be much deeper underwater. Pole Star could slip across after all. Despair engulfed him. He hadn't thought about the storm surge. No wonder Dauntless had come across unscathed even when they were in the wrong position. Pole Star was reefing its own sails and slowing, guiding itself with minimum acceleration so that it could come up beside them and board. Naylor watched with sick despair. He'd been wrong. He thought he'd been so damn smart, and now they were going to be boarded, all because he hadn't thought of all the details.
"Captain!"
Naylor shouted.
"They're not..."
Pole Star stopped moving forward. It hung in the waves, stilled, even as water rushed around it. A wave crashed against it. Another. A bustle of activity on the decks was suddenly visible. An ant mound of people suddenly kicked to life. The ship swung slowly sideways, then stopped. A huge wave smashed into it. Another. The ship turned completely broadside, and then it snagged again, caught on another spire from the deep. A huge wave smashed into its hull, and the entire ship heeled. Reynolds laughed and clapped Naylor on the shoulder.
"They've got their hands full now," she shouted over the storm roar. "Let's finish this."
They ran for the launches, Naylor piling in behind Reynolds. The little raft swung above roiling seas, dangling from a pair of drop clips. Knot and Vine and Candlas and a half-dozen other crewmen were all in with him. Down the length of the ship, two other launches dangled over the side, full of Dauntless's crew. The high whine of biodiesel engines firing live carried over the storm's rush. Prop blades blurred as motors revved. Their own launch's motor fired alive, vibrating. The boats ahead of them cut free. They dropped like rocks in the waves, engines screaming. They hit water and shot forward, arrowing for the sinking Pole Star.
"Clear!"
Reynolds shouted. Drop hooks snapped open. Their launch plunged. Naylor's stomach flew into his mouth. Free fall. They slammed into the ocean. Naylor jackknifed forward and slammed into Vine's broad back. Pain blossomed. He'd bitten his lip. Their raft surged forward and he grabbed for balance as they accelerated.
"Weapons check!"
Candlas shouted. Naylor reached for the pistol strapped to his waist. He could feel his heart pounding. Trimble grinned beside him.
"Nothing better than a storm boarding, right, boy?"
Naylor nodded sickly. Their tiny boat hurtled through foam and breakers under Reynolds' sure hand. They shot up beside the tilting pole star, coming at her from the stern. Enemy crew were out on the deck. Naylor thought he saw the captain clinging to a rail, trying to send her people out to stabilize the wreck. He felt a stab of victory. One moment she must have been so confident, and now she was frantic. He laughed in the rain, feeling water gushing down his face. He'd done that. Their launch slammed up against Polestar's hull. Knott hurled a rope ladder grapple up over the rail, then rushed up the side with Vine close behind. They surged over the rail with their guns and machetes, followed by the rest of the crew. Reynolds slapped Naylor's back.
"Move it, boy!"
Naylor grabbed the ladder and clambered up. He came over the side in time to see Captain Candless grappling with the other captain. He twisted his body, and the woman plunged over the rail. She landed in the sea, splashing for survival. Candless pointed his sea pistol at the remaining crew.
"Stand down and surrender!"
he shouted over the roar of the storm, and even if his voice wasn't clear, the gun was. Naylor looked down into the surging surf and wondered what had happened to the other captain. She was simply gone, sucked under in the teeth. They'd taken the Pole Star. Naylor turned to smile at Reynolds when a wave of half-men boiled up from the hold, guns firing. Candless went down in a spray of blood. Reynolds threw Naylor aside and her gun cracked beside him. Naylor lifted his own pistol, shooting through the rain, sure that he was missing and yet squeezing the trigger anyway. A huge wave hit the ship. Polestar's deck tilted sideways. Combatants went sliding into the sea. Naylor grabbed for the rail as he went over the edge. His gun plunged into the water. He dangled half off the deck. Storm surf surged up around his legs, grasping and eager to take him under. Naylor dragged himself out of the vortex and clung to the rail. The Great Clipper, so seemingly impregnable, had become impossibly small. It was sinking. Reynolds was shooting at someone in the darkness, but Naylor couldn't see who. She caught sight of him.
"Get Miss Nita!"
she shouted as bullets ricocheted around her. One of Polestar's half-men rose up from the water beside them. Unkillable, they seemed. Reynolds turned her pistol on the creature and shot him in the chest. He sank back. Naylor couldn't see any of Dauntless's half-men at all. Maybe Knott and Vine and their kin were already dead. Reynolds's pistol cracked again. She glared at Naylor.
"Go!"
Naylor drew his fighting knife and fumbled his now useless ammunition over to Reynolds. He scrambled for the nearest hatch, praying that he wasn't about to run into another lot of half-men, and dove through. The storm's fury muted. Naylor wiped his face frantically, clearing his vision, blinking in the sudden stillness. Emergency LED lights lit the corridor, running on current from the ship's batteries. Naylor couldn't help inanely calculating scavenge value of the lighting systems as he made his way down the corridor. He passed brass fittings and steel doors, noting easily stripped service lines. The corridor tilted, rocked by the storm waves outside. Naylor staggered.
"Focus, you idiot. Find Lucky Girl and get out."
Nothing moved in the dim red glow of the corridors. Somewhere above, guns were still firing, but the interior was strangely silent. Naylor made his way deeper into the ship, listening to the creak and rush of water outside, his stealthy footsteps and the rasp of his own loud breathing. He paused, trying to get his breath back. He listened for signs of movement ahead. Nothing. He crept farther down the corridor, his knife held ready beside him. He couldn't be alone down here. Lucky Girl had to be around, and where she was, there would be others, too. Once again, Naylor wondered at his capacity for suicidal stupidity. Betraying his father had been colossally stupid, but hunting around in a sinking ship topped it. If he'd been smart, he would have let the whole thing go when Lucky Girl disappeared in the Orleans. He could have found other work. He could have walked away without a problem, gone up the Mississippi, anything. But instead he'd been swept up in the loyalty that her people displayed, Candless and Reynolds and Knott and Vine. And if he was honest, his own silly fantasies about the beautiful Swank girl had played a part too. Nice going, Hero. He shook his head. Here he was, back at Bright Sands Beach, where he started, worse off than ever, and about to get his head shot off by a half-man because he thought some Swank girl... Movement ahead. Noises. Naylor pressed against the corridor wall. Muffled shouts echoed to him. He peered down the corridor. A ladder led down. He slipped closer and stuck his head close to the hole, listening.
Get me another seal! No, there! Not there! Here! Here!
More shouts. Crew trying to contain the damage, trying to block the rushing sea as it poured into the ship. Naylor peered through the hole. Down below, the corridor was filling with water. Men and women splashed through the water knee-deep in its embrace. More water sprayed from the walls, and still the crew labored. Naylor wished he had a gun. He could have shot them all. He stifled the thought. It was insane to pick a fight with people who didn't care about him one way or the other. One of the crewmen turned. His eyes widened.
Hey!
Naylor jerked his head back up the hole and ran.
Boarders!
The cry went up.
Boarders!
But Naylor was far down the hall. Boots clanged on the ladder as he ducked into a cabin and closed the door. He was in a crew cabin, bunks and gear strewn wildly by the heaving of the ship. Boots pounded past. Naylor took a deep breath and slipped back out. The tilt of the ship was making it difficult to move around. The corridors were all canted so that the door in the wall was slowly turning into a door in the floor. He actually had to lift the door in order to slide out of the room, and then he slid to the far side of the corridor before getting his footing. The ship was trying to turn turtle. He scrambled for the ladder, praying that he wasn't about to run into more crew. Climbing down was an odd experience of scrambling nearly sideways. The entire ship was almost on its side. Water poured around him. He ran past where the crew had sealed off a part of the cargo hold, headed deeper into the belly of the torn ship, searching desperately through cabins and storerooms. He found no one. Everyone had to be above decks or busy fighting to control the flooding. He was alone. Finally, he gave up on stealth and simply shouted,
"Lucky girl! Where the hell are you? Nita!"
No response. She had to be higher up. That was the only answer. He'd somehow missed her. Or else she'd been drugged. Or she'd been taken off already. Or she'd never been here at all. He grimaced. She could have been left back in the Orleans. Or killed. He slogged through water trying to find his way out. The water was in all the decks now. The wall had become the floor, and he was having a hard time keeping his orientation as the ship went onto its side. The ship jerked. The world turned again. Water sprayed. He yanked open a door and was rewarded with a flood of water that sent him sprawling and sliding down the corridor before he came up, gasping, and managed to get to his feet. He fled the rising waters.
Lucky girl!
Still nothing. Water was everywhere. LEDs were shorting out, sending portions of the ship into blackness. The ship was sinking. He had to get out. Judging from the empty corridors and rooms, even the crew had run. He wondered what had happened with the fight. Who had won? He scrambled through corridors made topsy-turvy by the ship's cant. The smell of oiled machinery was strong in his nostrils, reeking. It was like being back on one of the ship-breaking crews, like being trapped in the oil room. He pushed open another door and crawled through. He was lost, all right. Inside, the hydrofoil gearing for the Polestar sat in red dimness, clicking gears and whirring automation mechanicals for the sails and hydrofoils and parasail reels. Warning signs said, "Speed mechanicals in use. Watch hands and loose clothing." Naylor was amused that he could actually make out the meanings now. He was going to drown. But hey, he could read. On one wall, flashers and safety corridors blinked to indicate that there were electric malfunctions and topside failures, probably from having the conning deck go under. The mechanicals were almost exactly the same as the ones he'd had to lubricate under Nott's supervision on Dauntless. Bigger, but the layout was awfully similar. As the ship had gone onto its side, the service panels that had been in place on the floor had come loose and fallen free, revealing the huge gears and interlocking hydraulic systems. It looked like ships in the Patel Global Fleet were almost the same. Nita wouldn't be here. He turned to keep searching. The ship groaned and shifted under him again. Naylor wondered if he was going to end up like Jackson Boy after all. Dead in a different bit of scavenge, but dead just the same.
Nita, where the hell are you?
He broke into a new corridor. The ship was trying to turn upside down, kept from capsizing only by the strength of its masts where they tangled in the teeth. If the ship turned turtle, he'd have to swim out. He wondered if he'd be able to make it up through the waves and wreckage.
"Well, I'll be damned,"
a familiar voice interrupted his thoughts.
"Hello there, lucky boy."
Naylor turned, his skin crawling. His father stood in the soaking corridor with Nita slung over his shoulder, gagged and bound at her wrists and ankles. Water ran slick on his face, and a machete gleamed in his hand. Naylor stepped back, horrified. His father smiled. Even in the dimness of the red LEDs, Naylor could tell the man was sliding high. He had the bright, wide eyes and the feral grin of an addict deep in his drugs.
"God damn," Richard Lopez said. "I didn't think I'd run into you here."
He dumped Nita unceremoniously on the ground and swung his machete in an experimental arc.
"Didn't think I'd ever see you again."
Naylor tried to shrug, tried not to show his fear.
"Yeah, me either,"
his father laughed. The sound echoed in the cramped space. The dragon stood out stark on his bare arms, curling up around his Adam's apple like spikes. His ribs showed over the ripple of his fighter's muscles.
"You gonna just stand there?" his father asked. "Or you gonna help me?"
Naylor hesitated, confused.
"Help you? You want me to help you with a girl?"
His father grinned.
"Just kidding. I should have let you die when we found the scavenge. Should have known you'd be an ungrateful little bastard."
"Just let her go," Naylor said. "You don't need her."
"Nope."
His father shook his head.
"I don't need her. But I'm not going out empty-handed, and she looks like the best scavenge here."
"They'll catch you."
"Who?"
his father laughed.
"No one gives a damn anymore. Every man for himself and all that."
He shrugged.
"Anyway, they don't really care if she's alive or dead. If I sell her for spare parts to the harvesters, it's all the same to them."
He glanced at her.
"She might have been a swank once, but she's scavenged now."
Naylor followed his father's gaze. Nita was conscious. He was surprised to see it. She was fighting against her bonds, trying to get free. Naylor's father kicked her hard.
"Sit still," he said.
Nita grunted in pain, then sobbed as her breath returned. Richard turned to Naylor. He twitched his machete.
"What are you thinking, boy? Thinking you're gonna cut down your old man with your little knife? Get back at me for all your whippings?"
He twitched the machete again, letting the blade bob before Naylor.
"Come on, then."
He beckoned Naylor forward.
Hand to hand, boy. Just like the ring.
He bared his damaged teeth.
I'm going to spread your guts on the floor.
He lunged. Naylor hurled himself aside. The machete slashed past his face. His father laughed.
Good job, boy. You're damn quick.
He slashed again, and Naylor's belly burned where the blade cut a shallow line.
Almost as quick as me.
Naylor staggered back. The cut wasn't deep. He'd gotten worse on light crew. But it filled him with fear to see how fast his father was. He was as deadly as a half-man. Richard Lopez closed on him, making short jabs with his machete. Naylor gave ground. He fainted with his own shorter knife, trying to slash inside the machete. But his father anticipated him, and this time the machete caught Naylor across the cheek.
Still a little slow, boy.
Naylor backed off, fighting fear. He swiped away the blood that ran freely from his face. The man was horrifyingly fast. Amped on amphetamines, he was superhuman. Naylor remembered the time his father had beaten three opponents in the ring at the same time, on a dare. He'd been overmatched, but he'd left the others crushed and unconscious, and stood over them all, bloody teeth gleaming with triumph. The man was born to fight. His father slashed again. Naylor jumped back.
Concentrate, Naylor told himself.
His father exploded into motion. Naylor barely slid inside the machete's cut. His father's body slammed into him. Naylor's hand, slick with blood, lost his knife. It went flying. He and his father went over in a tumble. Richard grabbed at him, but Naylor wriggled free and scrambled down the corridor. His father laughed.
You can't run away that easy.
Naylor searched frantically for his knife, but couldn't see it in the dimness. His father stalked him. Naylor turned and ran. Behind him, his father laughed and gave chase as Naylor dashed for the mechanicals room. Under the glow of emergency lighting, Naylor cast about, looking for some tool he could use as a weapon. His father burst into the room behind him.
My, my, you're a slippery one.
Naylor backed away. The damn Polestar crew kept a tight ship, not even a wrench or a screwdriver lying around. Naylor grabbed a loose service panel and hurled it, but his father dodged easily.
That the best you can do? He asked.
Naylor grabbed another loose maintenance panel, then looked up at where it had fallen from. An entire wall of gears and hydraulic systems loomed beside him, the floor of the ship that had now become a wall. If he could climb up, he might be able to get out of reach inside a maintenance hole. Naylor ran to the wall of exposed gears and pulled himself up. With the ship turned sideways, there were enough open panels that he could climb up along them. He peered into the slots between, almost sobbing with desperation. None of the gaps were big enough for him to hide from his father's machete reach. He climbed higher.
Where do you think you're going, boy?
Naylor didn't answer. He got a hold of another huge gear and hauled himself higher. He slapped at a service panel's lock and tore it away. He threw it down at his father, missing again. Below him, Richard Lopez was watching, bemused.
You think I can't just climb up and pull you down?
He shook his head.
I used to think you were smart, boy.
Naylor pulled himself higher. His father said,
Why don't you just come down and die like a man? It would be so much easier for both of us.
Naylor shook his head.
Come get me if you want me.
He loosened another panel. If his father could be convinced to start climbing, he could maybe drop the damn thing right on his father's head.
All right, boy. I tried to be nice.
His father took hold of a gear and reached up for another handhold in the next service panel. With the machete, his climbing was hampered, but he was horrifyingly fast, even so. Naylor dropped the panel, For a moment he thought it would catch his father perfectly, but the entire ship heaved with another wave and the panel missed. Richard Lopez grinned up at Naylor unfazed.
"Guess you're not such a lucky boy after all."
Then, quick as a spider, he clambered up after Naylor. Naylor scrambled higher, but there was nowhere else to go. He clung to a huge gear, staring down at his dad. He was trapped. Richard Lopez smiled and swung his machete. Naylor yanked his feet out of reach. The machete clanged against steel. A blinking LED caught Naylor's eye. He stared and felt a surge of hope. He was right beside a control deck, with its familiar label, "Foil Override. Keep hands and loose clothing clear." Naylor slapped frantically at the release lever and hit the engagement override button, just like Knott had done what seemed like ages ago. He looked down at his father.
"Let me go, Dad. Just let me and Nita go."
"Not this time, boy."
Richard Lopez grabbed Naylor's ankle. Naylor said a prayer to the fates, grabbed the engagement lever, and jumped free. His weight yanked the lever down, and then he was falling. The scream of machinery filled the room. Chapter 24. Naylor hit the floor. His ankle blossomed with pain. The scream of machinery cut off abruptly. Naylor looked up. His father dangled above him, half his body sucked into the hydrofoil's gear system. The man was trying to reach into the machinery where an arm and leg had been consumed. Blood showed on his teeth.
"Damn,"
he said. He seemed puzzled. More than anything else, he tried to free himself again. Naylor's skin crawled. The man should have been dead, the way he'd been sucked into the gears, but still he fought for life. Fueled by amphetamines and sliding high, his father still didn't understand his predicament. For a terrible moment, Naylor was filled with dread that his father could not die, that he would pry himself free and come after him once again. Richard stared down at him.
"Come here, boy."
Naylor shook his head and backed away. His father's free hand went to the gears again.
"What the hell did you do?"
He stared at the gears, then stared at the blood dripping from within the mechanicals. In the LED dimness, it was almost black.
"I'm not done yet,"
his father said. He looked down at Naylor.
"I'm nowhere near done yet."
But already his voice was weak. Naylor stared up at the man who had terrorized him for so much of his life. All of a sudden, Richard Lopez was different. Not the swaggering, dangerous man he had been, but something else. Miserable. Vulnerable.
"Come on, lucky boy," his father croaked. "We're family. Help me out."
He tried to reach down to Naylor. Tried to smile. Licked bloody lips.
"Please,"
he said. And then more softly,
"I'm sorry."
Naylor's body shook with revulsion. He gave his father one last look, then turned away, limping for where Lucky Girl lay bound. He ran into her at the door and almost screamed before he recognized her. She hefted his fighting knife.
"Thanks for the knife," she said.
"Where's..." She gasped. Naylor pulled her out of the room, nearly dragging her.
"Come on."
He hurried down the corridor, half expecting his father to call after him again, but no more sounds followed them.
"Where are we going?" she panted. "We need to get out."
He dragged her to a ladder that led to the upper decks. Suddenly the ship shuddered and rolled. The main mast had finally given way. They were completely upside down. Trying to get to the upper decks meant climbing down into the sea.
"We've turned turtle," he muttered. "We can't go down."
He peered down into the hole. It was already half full of water. The next deck down would be completely submerged.
"Can we swim out?" she asked. "Not in the dark. Not without knowing where to go."
The water was rising.
"We're going under," he said.
Despair filled him. Nita stared at the water.
"Then we go up, right?"
She shook him.
"Right? We go up."
She yanked his arm.
"Come on, we need to find a way into the bottom of the ship."
"What are you looking for?" he asked.
"The ship's sinking, right? Water's getting in from somewhere. Maybe there's a hole in the hull."
Naylor nodded, suddenly understanding. He stopped her and tugged her in a different direction.
"This way. We need to get into the holds. They're this way." "How do you know which way to go?"
"I'm a shipbreaker," Naylor laughed. "Spend enough time tearing apart old ships, and you get to understand them."
They dashed into another corridor, then clambered up a ladder. They ran along the ceiling of another corridor, the floor running over their heads.
"There!"
He smiled as he saw the ladder that led to where the crew had been working on sealing the hold.
"Get ready,"
he said, as he put the fighting knife to the seals.
"For what?"
"A lot of water."
Nita grabbed a brass fitting with one hand and his belt with the other. She nodded to him.
"Ready."
Naylor slashed the membrane that the crew had laid down in their vain effort to save the ship. The rubbery stuff parted. Water roared down over them. They slammed against the wall. Naylor clutched for Nita as the water tore at him. A moment later, the rush slowed to a trickle. It wasn't as much as Naylor had feared. He guessed that a lot of it had already drained down into the ship from other points. He clambered through the hatch.
"This way." "How did you find me?"
Nita asked as she tagged behind.
"When they caught me in the Orleans, I thought I was done for."
"Captain Candless."
Naylor broke off, thinking of the shots fired in the darkness, the spray of blood as the captain went down.
"He had an idea of how to hunt for you."
"And you came along?"
Naylor grinned.
"Pretty stupid, huh?"
She laughed.
"I'll say."
They threaded through wrecked cargo rooms, climbing over jumbled trash to reach the doors that were now upside down and above them. At last, they dropped into the hold. Lightning cracked, illuminating a hole in the hull overhead, a ragged tear in the carbon fiber. Farther down, another hole showed, a testament to the success of Naylor's plan. Seawater cascaded through the holes as a wave crashed across the hull, soaking strewn cargo boxes and jumbled equipment. Naylor squinted up at the torn hull. Lightning flashed. It wasn't much of a hole, more of a crack. And it was high, too damn high. Nita yanked his arm.
"The cargo crates," she said. "We'll stack them."
She grabbed a crate and dragged it below the hole. Naylor saw what she meant and rushed to help. They worked feverishly. Some crates were too heavy to move alone, and others too heavy for both of them to lift. Naylor's ankle burned with pain as he tried to move and stack the junk into a semblance of a tower. More water poured down over them. Naylor was gasping with effort and pain. Nita crawled up the pile of crates, reaching down as he handed up more boxes. Another wave rushed into the hole, a big one that nearly knocked Nita from her perch.
"We're going under!"
Naylor shouted over the storm roar. Nita stared at the hole above her.
"I think we're high enough."
"Then jump!"
"What about you?"
"You have to go first. My ankle might not make it. When you get up, give me a hand."
Nita nodded and crouched, teetering at the top of the pile. She leaped. A wave crashed down on her, but her hands caught the edge and held, and then she was clambering up and out of the hold. Naylor scrambled up after her. The crates were all uneven from the movement of the ship. His ankle was a bright blossom of pain. It was almost paralyzing. There was no way he'd make the jump. Nita's face appeared in the opening above. She extended her hand.
Hurry!
He got his feet under him and crouched. Ignore the pain, he told himself. Just make the jump. He took a deep breath and sprang upward. His ankle exploded. His fingers caught the hull's ragged edge, slipped. Nita grabbed his wrist.
Hold on!
A wave crashed over, pouring down over them. He clung to the hull's edge, coughing and spitting. Another wave poured down. Nita's grip was slipping.
I can't pull you up, she shouted.
Get up, he told himself. If you keep hanging here, you'll fall and break your neck. You didn't come this far just to drown in the dark. But he was so tired.
Crew up, Naylor,
Lucky Girl shouted.
You think I'm going to pull your ass up here like a damn swank?
Naylor almost laughed. He clawed at the edge of the ship and slowly hauled himself through the hole. Nita grabbed him under his arm, yanked at his shirt, dragging him higher. He scrambled for a grip on the slippery hull. Another wave surged over them, but he was braced this time, and when it passed, he clawed his way out with Nita dragging him. At last he swung his legs out of the hold and clung, gasping, to the hull. Rain poured down over them. Nita lay beside him, her black hair hanging like thick wet snakes around her face. Lightning cracked bright and hard, blinding after the darkness of the ship. More rain sheeted down. 100 meters away, Dauntless lay anchored, churning in the storm.
That's where we're going, Naylor said. What, no water taxi?
Despite himself, Naylor grinned.
You swanks always want it easy.
Yeah.
Her expression turned solemn as she stared at the Dauntless.
Sink or swim, right?
Pretty much.
She squinted into the rain.
I've swum farther, she said. We can do this.
She tore off her shoes and waited until the next wave surged over them, then dove with it, letting its force carry her forward. She bobbed like a fish. Naylor said a prayer to the fates, thinking of the disappeared captain of the Pole Star, and followed her in. The sea swallowed him in churn and roar. Every time he kicked, his ankle exploded with pain. He paddled frantically for what he thought was the surface. Waves tried to suck him down. He flailed, struggling to find air, clawed at foam and came up gasping. Another wave sucked him down. He tumbled. He fought again to free himself from the hungry depths and came up coughing and sputtering, sucked air, kicked and gasped with pain.
Float it! Nita shouted. Let the current pull you!
She was riding the waves beside him. One curled over her and she dipped under and came up again, swimming strongly.
Don't fight it, she shouted.
And then she was up beside him, supporting him, helping him swim. He was surprised to see that she was smiling. And then they were swirling forward and the waves were all around and he could see there was a rhythm to them. They were past the teeth and out of the vortex, and now, suddenly, the current was on their side, pushing them forward, taking them exactly where they wanted to go. Dauntless loomed over them. Life rings sailed over the side, splashing into the swirl and froth. Naylor wondered briefly who controlled the ship, and then realized that he didn't really care. He and Lucky Girl paddled for the life rings, stretching for salvation. Chapter 25 Killing always costs. It was Pima's mother sitting beside him, both of them staring out at the sea. Naylor had told her what had happened on Polestar, and was surprised to find himself crying, and then he had simply stopped. Now he seemed to feel nothing at all. just a strange hollow space under his ribs that refused to go away.
"He was bad news," she said. "I don't say that about many people, but Richard Lopez left a lot of hurt behind him."
"Yeah," Naylor agreed, "but still it didn't feel right. His dad had been crazy and destructive, and if he was honest, downright evil. But now that he was dead, Naylor couldn't help remembering other times as well. Times when the man hadn't been high, when he'd laughed at jokes, when they'd roasted a pig on the beach. Good times. Safe times, his father smiling and telling stories about people who had made big scores. Lucky strikes, every one of them.
"He wasn't all bad," he murmured.
"No." Sadna shook her head.
"But he wasn't good. Not at the end. And not for a long time before."
"Yeah, I know that. He would have killed me if I hadn't killed him."
"But that's not helping you, is it?"
"No." She laughed sadly.
"That's good. I'm glad."
Naylor looked at her, puzzled.
"Richard never felt a thing when he hurt people. Just didn't give a damn. It's good that you feel something. Trust me, even if it hurts, it's good."
"I don't know." Naylor stared at the sea. "Maybe you're wrong. I..." He hesitated. "I was glad when I killed him. Really glad. I remember seeing all those levers and knowing just what I had to do. And I did it." He looked up at Sadna. "As soon as I heard the machines kick on, I knew I'd won. I felt like a lucky strike. It was better than anything. Better than getting out of the oil room. Better than finding Lucky Girl's wreck. I was alive and he wasn't. And I felt strong. Really strong."
"And now?"
"I don't know." Naylor shrugged. "Blue eyes. Now him." He looked at Sadna. "Tool said I was just like my dad when I pig-stuck Blue Eyes."
"You're not."
"Maybe I am, right? I don't feel a thing. Not a damn thing. I was glad when I did it, and now I don't feel anything at all. I'm empty. Just empty.
And that scars you."
"You said my dad didn't feel anything when he hurt people." Sadna reached over and took Naylor's chin, turned his gaze so he couldn't look away.
"Listen, Naylor. You're not your dad. If you were your dad, you'd be down on the beach drinking with your friends, looking for a girl to keep you company tonight, and feeling pleased with yourself. You wouldn't be up here worrying about why you don't feel worse."
"Yeah, I guess."
"I know. Believe me, if you don't believe yourself, getting over something like this takes time. It won't be better today. Not tomorrow, either. Maybe in a year, though, it won't be like this. Maybe in a year you'll have mostly forgotten. But it will still be there. You've got blood on your hands."
She shrugged.
"It always costs. It never goes away."
She nodded toward where Lucky Strike had started a fate's shrine in the trees.
"Go make an offering to the fates. Be glad you were lucky and fast and smart. And then go do something right in the world."
"That's it? That's all?" Naylor laughed. "Go do something good?"
"You want someone to beat you? Have Lucky Strike take an eye for an eye, maybe?"
"I don't know," Naylor shrugged. "At the end..." He hesitated, then let out a shuddering breath. "At the end, I think he was different. Like he came back to the way he was before. I think he could see me." Naylor trailed off, then said, "He wasn't all bad." He shook his head. He kept circling back to that. He hated repeating it, didn't know why he bothered.
Why can't I just be glad he's dead?
It will get better.
Sadna gripped his shoulder.